Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Narrative First Podcast, a podcast where we discuss story structure and story analysis from a Dramatica point of view. This is episode number 5, Discovering the Story You Never Knew. Welcome to a special bonus episode of the Narrative First Podcast. Trying to get caught up here with my weekly schedule of articles and film analysis. Last week I did both an analysis of Creed, and I finished up my series on the playground exercises. This one is going to be very personal, very intimate, and should show you exactly how powerful and how freeing these exercises can be. A lot of people, when they look at Dramatica or they take a look at it and they try and work their way through it, they get really frustrated. The interface is really cumbersome. It's hard to figure out exactly what's going on. I plan to, in the future, do a bunch of screencasts to show you exactly how I use it. Because when I use Dramatica, I don't actually go through the story guide or do any of that sort of step-by-step things that most people do when they first start using Dramatica. Instead, I kind of use more of a holistic approach where I go in through the story engine and the theme browser and basically just try and look around and get a feel for what the story is that that I saw. So if it was like Creed, which I'll get into in just a few minutes here, I knew where the main character was. I had a pretty good idea. The overall story through line seemed pretty obvious. I knew who the influence character was, but I wasn't quite sure what the thematics there. But after looking into the, you know, the theme browser and looking at where the main character was and where the overall story was, story form just kind of popped out. So I'll be doing those fairly soon, and you'll be able to take a look at them, and hopefully that should help people get a better idea of how to use Dramatica to not only just analyze films, because it's productive from an educational standpoint because you learn a lot about Dramatica, but it doesn't quite exactly show you, you know, what you're supposed to do if you're trying to create a story using Dramatica. And that's what these playground exercises are all about. Before we get started, I also want to let you know, for those of you who haven't heard the last episode, Melanie and I, that's Melanie Ann Phillips, the co-creator of the Dramatica Theory of Story, we're going to start presenting some classes and workshops, both paid and free, and both paid and free will be streamed online. So if you're not available to come join us in Burbank, you can watch it depending wherever you are through the magic of the internet. If you would like more information about these classes, they're going to start in mid-May. Please go to narrativefirst.com/subscribe and sign up for our newsletter. Down at the very bottom, you'll see a checkbox for Narrative First and StoryMind Presents. StoryMind is Melanie's part of it. So if you go down there and click that checkbox, as soon as we have the class schedule figured out and we have that all ready for you, you can see which ones you want to attend and which ones you would like to just watch online. What I want to do first today is to go over my analysis of Creed, which is Ryan Coogler's update of the Rocky mythology. I absolutely love this film. I thought it was great. The acting was fantastic. The music was very inspiring, made me want to go out and run and punch a bunch of things. And the story, I thought, was really solid. It felt very solid. I was almost positive there was going to be a solid story form at the center of it once I sat down with Dramatica. But you just get a feel for it when you watch these movies and you know right away, oh, okay, this has a story. This has an actual story to it. It's not like The Revenant, where you watch it, and yes, it's really frightening watching him get torn apart by the bear, and the music's cool in that, and the cinematography is amazing. But there really isn't a story there. It's not like something that you'd want to actually go and see again. The hallmark of a complete story is, as soon as it's over, you want to watch it again. Because the story's actually offering you something that you can't get in real life. You know, we can't both be within ourselves and without ourselves at the same time, but a story actually gives us that opportunity. And it gives us that opportunity through the main character through line and the overall story through line. So the main character through line, you get to see the story from within. Overall story through line, you get to see the problem from without yourself. And, you know, juxtaposing those two against each other, you actually can get meaning from a story. You can actually see the most appropriate way or inappropriate way to solve problems. And that's how we use narrative to communicate the way we go about solving our problems. So when you have a film like Creed that's got a great story to it, it's actually trying to communicate some message to you. Whether or not the authors intended it or not, I believe deep down inside, the story form that I will present to you was what they were going for. It was kind of their argument, what they were trying to prove with the story. So here we go with my analysis of Creed. Ryan Coogler's Creed delivers a powerful knockout blow in the story structure department. You want to know why it scores 94% on Rotten Tomatoes? Every single through line is accounted for, and the thematic elements in each all add up to a coherent and consistent message. Never back down. A lesser film would simply hit viewers over the head with that controlling idea. Creed does it with skill and panache. That single tracking shot during Hollywood Donnie's first fight? Simply icing on the cake of a terrific story. Adonis Donnie Johnson Creed, played by Michael B. Jordan, is Apollo Creed's son, a label he wants everyone to stop using. Donnie is unproven, and any time he gets an opportunity to show people how wrong they are about him, he takes it and shows them the truth. Donnie doesn't hesitate to step into the ring from beginning to end and comes to terms with being his father's son. Now, if you look at this article on the website, you'll see a whole bunch of story points, appreciations, that interpret what I just read to you. So, for instance, when we look at Donnie Johnson Creed is Apollo Creed's son, a label he wants everyone to stop using. Well, that's a main character through line of situation, because personally, we get to experience what it's like to feel what it's like to be Apollo Creed's son. I mean, that's his situation. There's no way he's getting out of that. He's stuck with that label. And then the main character of growth of stop, when you have a character that is steadfast, like Donnie is, it will feel like he's holding out for either something to stop or something to start. The main character growth, you know, is either stop or start. And that's where you get the character arc in the story. So, I mean, he obviously, even if he was a changed character, he's obviously got some chip on his shoulder, but he's basically holding out, waiting for people to stop thinking of him as his father's son. And then you look at the next sentence here. Donnie is unproven, and any time he gets an opportunity to show people how wrong they are about him, he takes it and shows them the truth. So here we have the main character problem of unproven. Donnie basically has not had his chance to prove himself in the ring. He's an unproven entity. And, you know, if he was to receive that main character solution of proven, like he actually proved that, you know, he could do it, then he would probably back down a little bit. But every time anybody challenges him and he feels like he has to, you know, go forth and show them what he can do, that's coming because he's driven by this feeling of unproven. And really the essence of it is, which, you know, I think I get to later in the article, and this is the part of the film that really got to me, was when he was in the ring, and I believe he said something to the effect of, I want to prove that I wasn't a mistake. And that's something he'll never, ever, ever be able to prove. That's why he's a steadfast character, because that's just never going to happen. He might find a way to grow from it, but he'll never have that resolve because his father's passed away. So that unproven element, that thing that's driving him, that's what gives his character motivation. And when we look at the main character symptom of non-accurate and the main character response of accurate, well, those work really well together because people are labeling him and classifying him in a way that just simply isn't right. It's non-accurate. It's inaccurate. And so he goes and shows them the truth. He shows them what's really accurate. And the last one here, Donnie doesn't hesitate to step into the ring from beginning to end and comes to terms with being his father's son. So here we have the main character approach of doer. It's pretty clear that Creed is a doer. He's not one to sit there and sort of manipulate himself or kind of change who he is in order to deal with the punches that come his way. He's a doer. And his resolve is steadfast. I mean, there's no way he ever backs down. And the story judgment of good. Typically, this is applied to the main character's personal angst. And, you know, if you look at his relationship with his father and who he feels he is, he's in a much better place at the end of the story. And that's why you get a story judgment of good. Then I continue on with the overall story here. Then we have the boxing world, complete with training sessions, amateur fights, and championship bouts, all with one goal in mind, to determine who is best. So this, now we have the overall story through line in activity. It's obviously all about the boxing matches and who can beat up who and the training sessions, with an overall story concern of doing. Now this is in contrast to, you know, a possible concern of obtaining. If you have an obtaining concern, that's usually about, you know, actually going and winning the fight and defeating the enemy and capturing land or whatever it is. When you have an overall story concern of doing, the conflicts and struggles that everybody is going through is based on the actual doing of it. You know, who's the most skilled, who's the most experienced, who can actually get the job done. That's why you have an overall story concern of doing. So we continue. Everyone has their place in this world, a ranking that determines who they can fight and who they can't, a ranking that generally favors those with more fights under their belt. As I mentioned before, this has an overall story issue of experience. So it's really about who's got more time on the mat, who's actually been there the longest, who has the most wins. Generally speaking, that's the person that's always going to win, and that's the challenge that people are facing. Plus, you have the experiences of Rocky and what he went through, rehashing those old relationships. And the overall story problem of determination here, this isn't one I actually picked. This is one that came up based on other things that I chose. But I think it fits really well because what you have here is a system that has already determined who's the winner and who's the loser. It's determined who's going to play against who, and to a certain extent, who's supposed to win. And fighting against that determination is the struggle that the story explores. Tensions rise and punches are thrown the moment someone says something intolerable, and as reflected in Donnie's throughline, the resulting efforts are geared towards setting the record straight. So again, just like in the main character's throughline, we have an overall story symptom of non-accurate and an overall story response of accurate. Depending on story dynamics, other story dynamics that you have chosen, some throughlines will have the same symptom and response. This is the magic of the story because you're seeing the same conflict from different points of view. That's what Dramatica does. It looks down at the basis of what the actual conflict is. It doesn't tell you how you're supposed to tell it, but it says, okay, this is the conflict that you're exploring. So this is it from a main character point of view. And then I also get to see it from an overall character point of view. So again, here, people are, you know, at the weigh-in with Pretty Boy Conlin and the other guy. I mean, he throws a punch out of nowhere. That's completely intolerable, right? I mean, that would be the thing that everybody in the story is focusing on, when the real problem is the fact that he's already determined that he's a champion, and he should address that issue. In the end, it is Donnie who shocks the audience, and even the announcers themselves, driving them to proclaim they never expected to see Creed still standing. Ricky Conlin, played by Tony Bellew, may have won, but it was protagonist Creed that ultimately showed everyone how it was done by beating their expectations. So here you have a multi-appreciation moment, which means there's a ton of stuff going on in the story all in one scene. You have the story outcome of success, the story goal of doing, and the overall story solution of expectation. So again, with the concern of doing, that actually creates a goal of doing as well, which is basically, you know, you just need to fight. You know, it's like the first Rocky. It's not who wins or loses. It's, you know, whether or not you actually played the game. And Creed played the game and won. That was success. He lost the fight, but he won the match. You know, Conlin won the fight, but Creed won the night. That's where that comes from. And that overall story solution of expectation beats down the problem of determination, because it doesn't matter what people determine or what label they put on you. If you beat their expectations, you can actually win. And from an overall story standpoint, that's what the film is trying to prove. And it proves that by showing, hey, look, expectation can beat determination, and there'll be success. So then we get into the other half of the story, the one where I knew who it was going to be. You can tell by the poster, you know, you can see who the influence character is. But I wasn't sure exactly what kind of thematics he was dealing with, or what, you know, Dramatica would say would fit in the story, but I think they fit really well. Challenging Donnie's emotional growth every step of the way, Rocky Balboa, played by Sylvester Stallone, enters the film with his mind set. He's not getting back in the ring. So that's pretty obvious. That's the influence character through line of fixed attitude. So whereas Donnie Creed is... Donnie Creed. Yeah, that's right. So whereas Donnie Creed is, you know, stuck with this label of being his father's son, Rocky is stuck with this mindset that he's not getting back into the ring. and those two play against each other. Determined to avoid the same fate as his beloved deceased wife, Adrian, Rocky refuses to seek treatment for cancer, sorry, spoiler, preferring to live out his days numb and unresponsive to life's blows. That'd be the influence character problem of determination and the influence character concern of impulsive responses. So you see here again, the influence character problem matches the overall story problem. Whereas the main character symptom and response match the overall story symptom and response, the influence character problem and solution match the overall story problem and solution. And again, that's where you get that juxtaposition between the two through lines, which actually gives you the meaning of the story. So here, Rocky has already determined there's no way he's going to do these things. Just like in the big picture, everybody's determined who's going to win and who's not going to win. Rocky's already determined, I'm not putting up with that fight. I'm not fighting cancer. Remembering the endless bouts his wife experienced with chemo, Rocky prefers to keep it quiet and lets the disease consume him. So that gives him an influence character symptom of unending and an influence character response of ending. So, you know, he has that history where, you know, if you ask him, hey, Rock, what's the problem? He's like, well, these treatments are just going to go on and on and on, and I would just prefer to die. Now, the really amazing thing about this is I did not select this in Dramatica. When I do the actual screencast and show you, you know, exactly how this happened, I picked Creed's personal problems in Dramatica. So, well, if Creed is going through these problems and the overall story's here, then Rocky's going to be going through this stuff. You know, if you want to tell a complete coherent story, and this is perfect. You know, he has that symptom of like, it's just going to keep going on, and I just want it to end. Unfortunately for Rock, he develops a relationship with Donnie, a battle of wits and a battle of how one sees the world. So that gives you the last through line, which is the relationship story through line of psychology. They're both fighters and come together almost as a way to make up for Apollo Creed's tragic end. So this is an interesting thing. I wasn't quite sure what this was going to be, because obviously they have the relationship story of him training him, but that's more overall story. It's not really the relationship there, which is almost like a father-son sort of thing, where he's kind of filling in for Apollo. So with the relationship story problem of cause, they both are brought together in a relationship because of what happened in the past. Now, cause and effect are not the easiest of Dramatica terms to understand. Some people who are listening might get it. Others, we're struggling with, like, how do you have a problem of cause? So it's either that he is trying to cause this relationship to come together, or because of what happened to Apollo Creed, how he died in the ring, that's bringing them both together. Seeing the results of their hard work brings the two of them closer and gives them both a reason to climb those steps at the end together. So the solution, seeing that effect of what the two of them can do for each other and coming together, that is shown by the effects. So whereas the two of them were beaten down by the causes, almost like looking too much towards the past, they're now focused more on the effects, what they can do to effect change in each other, and that actually brings them closer together. It's really hard to put into words. It's more of a felt thing. Out of all the through lines, the relationship story through line is the hardest one for most people to get, because it's all about that heart, that kind of thing that's difficult to actually put into words. But which probably motivates most of us to actually write a story, is to get a chance to put that feeling into words. More importantly, though, and essential for the story's meaning, is Rock's eventual paradigm shift. He changes his resolve the moment he declares that he looks forward to seeking treatment for his disease. So here you have the influence character resolve. It's changed, right? The way it works is if the main character is a steadfast character, then the influence character will change their resolve, and vice versa. So in this story, Donnie Creed is a steadfast character, and therefore Rock must be the one that changes his resolve, and he does. He's actually looking forward to seeking treatment for the disease at the end. He's looking towards that expectation. So again, just like Creed beat everybody's expectation in the ring, now Rock is going to beat everybody's expectation of what he's willing to do. It may appear at first glance that both Rock and Donnie changed their resolve. After all, Donnie comes to terms with his father's legacy. Now, this is also another difficult thing, because most writers, when they're introduced to Dramatica, are automatically think, well, every main character changes, of course. So you have growth and you have resolve in the main character. The growth is how that resolve changes over time. And that's the change every writer is talking about. That happens in every story. But when you compare the end of a narrative with the beginning of the narrative, has the main character actually flipped their resolve, how they actually approach problems, or have they grown into that resolve? And in this case, Donnie Creed has grown into it. It's Rock who's actually flipped his resolve. Donnie's revelation that he wants to know that he was not a mistake is something he will never know, which I talked about earlier. It's almost as if he is accepting that part of himself, the main character problem of unproven, and owning it as a source of pride and a source of drive. So, a real change main character, he would have gotten proof, like some stupid letter from his dad that said, "Hey, I always loved you. I always knew you could do it." And that awful feeling you're feeling inside, that cheesy, just, ugh, that is bad storytelling. That's somebody who would break a story. Because the story form here says you can't do that. Not because it's cheesy and cliched and ridiculous, but because it would actually break the narrative that you set up. So that's the actual feeling that you're getting. Narratively speaking, Donnie grows into his resolve. Creed is a welcome addition to the Rocky mythos. Expertly told, brilliantly shot, and honestly acted, this film sits up there with the best of the best for 2015. Spotlight may have won the night, but there were plenty of other contenders that beat all expectations. And that concludes my analysis of Creed. Like I said, I'm probably this week or next, I will sit down and do a screencast of how I actually found the story form, because I think that'll help people understand better how to use Dramatica to do analysis and also to do their own work. Because everybody who's a writer, everybody who wants to write a story, knows deep down inside that there's something they want to say. And I think instinctively they have this idea that, oh, Dramatica can actually help me narrow this down and kind of figure out exactly the different parts so I can get across what it is I'm trying to say and not have that cheesy moment, that letter from Dad. So I'll do that either this week or next week. And of course, when I do, I'll let you know about it here. In the second half of today's episode, which is crazy, I never thought I'd do a podcast that was actually longer than 20 minutes, but look, here I am. Okay, so this is the concluding article in my series on the playground exercises. You can listen to the last two episodes. They go over the actual process that I went to get to this final storyline for the story that I'm working on. Now, this is a very personal sort of insight into something that's intimate to me. And like I said in the other two podcasts and the other two articles, I wasn't quite sure I was going to go this far, but feedback I received from readers and listeners and other people that I've explained this to, I just think it's worth it to get it out there. Regardless of whether or not this story ever becomes a movie, if it does, that would be great. If not, at least maybe it'll help some people better understand the story. So here we go with discovering the story you never knew. In the previous two articles, Generating an Abundance of Story Ideas and Finding Your True Self Through Writing, I discussed how I used my invention of the playground exercises to broaden my creativity and open up new avenues towards discovering my true self. In this final article, I want to show you how I take those previous exercises and fold them back into my original story idea. Now, it just so happens that I came up with something stronger in terms of theme and character while working on the playground exercises. As a result, there isn't too much left of my original idea. In fact, the whole notion of this character being a murderer who didn't know it fell away and will likely be an area I address with the overall story through line instead. This is okay, and something that would have happened naturally in the course of writing the screenplay. Discovering this lucid and lush character perspective? I'm not so sure I would have found that simply by trudging ahead. Full disclosure of my work. As mentioned before, I was a bit apprehensive about showing my work, but realize the value gained for you is more important than my own personal sense of artistic security. I have changed the name and race of this character to keep my eventual work pure. If somewhere down the road I manage to sell this thing and it becomes a movie, and the story remains relatively intact, you can always say you knew this character when. As you read the various combinations and reincarnations of my influence character, you will note some general observations. One, I removed all Dramatica terminology from the document. Better to move forward towards writing rather than backwards towards structure. Two, I used the work I did in the previous playground. I didn't invent any new ideas. Why seek inspiration when the inspiration already sits before you? So these are two things that I work with clients. The first one, I try and remove all Dramatica terminology by the time we hit this last final step. Because really, you don't get any points for writing a Dramatica story. You get points for writing a great story. And the sooner you can get away from thinking, oh, is this match an issue of fate? Does this match a catalyst of prediction? Once you can get that crap out of your head, because you've already done the work, the more honest and real your story will be, and the quicker you'll actually start writing a story. And then secondly, I actually use the work I did in the past playgrounds. A lot of clients reach this point, and then they start all over, which to me is complete madness, because you already have done all the work, so just copy and paste and sort of pick out the parts that you think are the coolest, and you actually have a storyline. And stop trying to force it into your preconceptions of what your story should be. That's the whole point of this exercise, is to break you out of your preconception and come up with something brand new. So removing Dramatica terminology, I find it easier to write the final product, whether a screenplay or novel, when I hide or obscure the support system trappings of the theory. When I write, I want to be fully invested in the art and craft. I don't want to be reconsidering whether or not I picked the right illustration for a relationship story, symptom of projection, or an influence character benchmark of impulsive responses. I trust that the work I did was adequate and sufficient for the task ahead, and like Forrest, begin shedding those braces. Use your work. Many clients I work with second-guess themselves at this point. Like my students at the California Institute of the Arts who had trashed their year-long film project 5 weeks before the deadline, these novelists and screenwriters sense a lack of inequity with their story and subconsciously assume it means they should work on something else. They will challenge the veracity of the playground exercises or suggest an entirely new story form altogether. It's a crazy phenomenon that I've witnessed over and over again. Why does it happen? When writers write or filmmakers make, they're caught up in the act of creation. They run into roadblocks or dead ends, figure that means they need to change the story or edit a sequence, and then address the problems and move on. They assume that fixing story problems are an actual part of the process. But when you figure out your story ahead of time, all those inequities of story structure and story meaning are resolved. You really have nothing more to figure out, except how you're going to tell it. This is what happens during the final phase of the playground exercise. During this phase, a writer must focus their energy on the storytelling aspect of their craft. Make it as interesting and compelling as possible, but don't lose all the work that has come before it. I can't tell you how many times writers spend weeks on their playgrounds only to completely forget them in the combined throughline phase. It's complete madness, but I understand why. They're used to building as they write. Here, they simply get to enjoy the act of writing, and it is scary. A playground for writers. The idea of the playground exercises is to infuse new life into the story you're working on, while simultaneously saving you tons of time. The act of engaging in these exercises frees a writer from the shackles of their original idea, an idea that more often than not is deficient for the task at hand. By defining one's purpose and using that as a basis for inducing all kinds of possible story events, a writer can play as if a child again, only this time with a boldness and confidence unheard of in the young. So now we have Harley's combined throughline. And Harley's not his name, by the way, but it does start with an H. Hating people who whine and remembering an anniversary. Harley is the kind of alien who hates hearing his manager's whine. They have it so good, being created in the lab rather than biology, yet they still don't ever seem to be happy. Harley hates it so much that he will lock himself within his slumber cubicle so that he won't have to hear it anymore. As a result, the workers around him fail to resolve their differences, the manufacturing line is a battleground, and Harley's ability to concentrate is shot. But that peace of mind he experiences begins to infect the other workers around him, and soon they all begin to revel in the ecstasy of shutting everyone out. A general breakdown in the system begins to occur. Of great concern to Harley is the anniversary of the passing of his father. His father never lived his life, never took a chance, and always did everything he was told to do. As a result, he died comfortable, but an unhappy comfortable. Harley still remembers the look on his father's face when he told Harley that his life was a waste. That look of emptiness scares Harley so much that he refuses to invest himself fully into his work. So this is the domain and concern. And if you go to the article, which will be in the show notes, beneath each set of story appreciations, I actually wrote little notes on what I did to actually combine the work in the previous two articles into this one. This first paragraph is domain and concern, but as you can tell, I took domain and concern off, and I don't even remember, I mean, I do know if I think about it, but I don't remember where the through line or concern actually are. So here you can see that I took the influence character domain of hating people who whine from playground number 3 and mixed it with the concern of remembering an anniversary from playground number 5. Now, I could have just as easily used both the domain and concern from number 5, but I felt as if the hating whiner's attitude suggested so much more to me in terms of scenes and situations. You know, I look to the playgrounds for material, so that when it comes to actual writing, I have a wealth of stuff to draw from. It gave me a basis for his character and a great idea of what he would bring to the story. This is what the domain and concern do. They give you the broadest notion of what kind of conflict will appear in that through line. Next point, being paranoid about someone versus evidence. Harley's constant paranoia that his managers are trying to diminish his importance creates an uneasy work environment for the creatures that work with him and inspires them to quit and to possibly do less work. The paranoia, while disruptive to the city, actually inspires great things in those older workers on their way out. A sanitation worker who used to delight in the sheer act of movement begins to dance in the early mornings at the end of her shift. A line manager who was originally taught to count stars in the sky returns his attention to the heavens and the wonders before him, even during work hours. Harley brings out the best in others by being paranoid about the truth of those in charge. So here we have the issue versus counterpoint. Okay, so in this case, playground number 5 I really liked. In fact, I had a hard time not simply copying and pasting over the whole thing. It just feels so fresh and unique to me. I mean, I came up with the whole thing based on Dramatica's prompts, but I still can't believe that I came up with the whole thing. Diving into this example of encoding, you'll see that I simply transposed the characters and environments to match the story I was telling. I didn't invent new ideas or ever write new sentences. I simply changed nouns. And that's the easiest thing. If you've done the work in the playground exercises, you already have something that's really interesting and compelling, just change the name of the character and you're done. No one who reads your story will ever know that it was based on a different character. All they will know is that it's really cool. Being ignorant and being lost in reverie. Harley believes the biggest problem in the city is when people, particularly aging workers, act ignorant. Ignorant of what is really going on around them, and ignorant of what it is their heart truly desires. Though conditioned from the outset, they still maintain a certain sense of hope that can't be taken away. Harley refuses to give in to the smaller life, and spends his waking hours contemplating different states of existence. He inspires the others to become caught up in the reverie of their long-lost dreams. The only way to move past what you should be is to lose yourself in the dreams of what you used to want to be. Here we have the symptom and response. And because he's a steadfast character, I work on the symptom and response before I actually do the problem. If it was a change character, I would do it differently. But here is symptom and response because that's what you're going to see the most of. This is an interesting one because here I took the symptom from my favorite number 5 and mixed it rather deftly with the response from number 3. I think I felt it worked better because of the reference to number 3 in the domain above. There is a certain amount of inertia that happens as you work through these exercises, and the smaller, more definite story points always seem to carry on a taste of the larger, broader story points above. But again, all I did was change the name. In other words, save yourself some work. Exploring reality. Harley gets most charged when he witnesses workers consumed with the reality of day-to-day life. Working the line, filing compensation forms, and rising and sleeping to the beat of the city motivates him to stand up and make a scene. Why would anyone accept the reality given to them? To be a sheep and not step out of the bounds of normal existence? That is the problem with the slumbering entity. Sleeping is a scourge. His refusal to accept reality insults his managers, humiliates those who do buy into it, and forces his loved one into working extra hours to make up for lost wages spent finding oneself. Now here's the problem. This is the influence character problem, not a problem with this actual process. For this story point, arguably the most important one in a through line, I really tried to communicate the gestalt of all my experiences working through these exercises. I knew there was a common theme that kept popping up for me, of this character who rebelled against the notion of one reality for all, and I wanted to make sure I didn't lose that. This is the personal stuff. I think that's why these exercises are so powerful. By repeatedly hitting certain thematic chords, the vibrations work their way through you until the standing waves of your own truth resonate back. This character perspective of not accepting the reality given to you really strikes home with me, and had absolutely nothing to do with a character who wakes up not knowing they killed someone the night before. Can you see the difference between honest expression and hackneyed plot points? That's why these exercises are so important. Having a slanted view on city life. Unfortunately, Harley's best friend has her own viewpoint of things in the city, and it does diminish his motivation from time to time. As committed as he is to the truth, he does love her and hates to see her so nervous and anxious. Her slanted view of life and doing what others expect of you tempers Harley's drive and pulls him back occasionally from making huge gains. Now, this was a direct copy and paste from Playground Number 5. Only the name was changed, and then I moved on to the next story point. Reasoning. The more his love or the other creatures attempt to reason with Harley, the more concerned he becomes that they will never be able to forget him. that he will always be needed, and that he will never be able to live out his personal dreams. This is the benchmark. Here I took the benchmark from number 3. Any of them from any of the playgrounds would have worked, but because the benchmark is so intimately tied to the concern, I figured it would be easier just to use the benchmark of that piece. And then we come to the plot progression or signposts. For the plot progression, I basically used the entirety of playground number 5. Compared to the others, it provided a flow of character energy that I simply didn't want to lose. If you'll notice, I changed some of the gists to better reflect what was going on in my story. If you understand gists and the original Dramatica terminology they represent, this really isn't that difficult to do. And it doesn't change the meaning or intent of the throughline or that particular story point. Regardless of gist, the same story point exists underneath. So it isn't so important that I write about Harley fearing water as it is that I write about Harley fearing. That's the subconscious or innermost desire story point I need to communicate here. The water part of it is the gist of the story point. So here I have 4 signposts, which will turn themselves into 4 acts in the final product. So Act 1 would be starting a think tank. Harley begins to disrupt the universe the moment he requests a gathering of workers and begins to develop a think tank for improvements in the workplace. Harley begins brainstorming with the other workers how they can make something more of themselves. This think tank upsets the managers in their sector, drives down productivity, and frightens the high-level authorities. But it also inspires the workers. And this moves into Act 2, thinking back to when they first arrived. Harley pushes it farther when he gets those workers to begin to think back to when they were first brought to the city and they were first realizing their potential, when they all believed they had no limitation, when the future seemed boundless. This thinking back inspires some of the workers, essential to the company's success, to quit to go follow their dreams. Henry is brought in and fired for his disruptive behavior. Now we hit the midpoint of the story. Being numb to instructions. The workers in Harley's original think tank act numb to further threats from their area managers and from the higher level authorities. When brought in to be counseled on rules and expectations, they fail to respond, almost as if they're not thinking. Their collective intelligence is already in the clouds because of Harley, and no amount of threat is ever going to change that. And this moves into the final act, fearing a rebellion. Fearing the rising tide of employee dissension created by Harley's persistent influence, the high authority decides to move its entire sealing operation offshore. The entire worker line is terminated, but not a single worker seems to fear the consequences. Instead, they seem to operate as if caught up in the rapture of being set free. They experience pure bliss as they shut out the world around them and indulge in their personal happiness. Or fear sets in as they worry about taking care of their own basic needs. That's when Harley teaches them the importance of being motivated. When you were hungry and well looked after, you were but a machine, a cog to help fulfill their dreams. But now that you're hungry and alone, now you have the chance to fulfill your own dreams. And that completes Harley's influence on my main character. A character I never dreamed of. All in all, I love how this throughline just feels right for the story I wanted to tell, but didn't know I wanted to tell. It's a huge departure from the idea of a friend who wakes up a murder suspect, yet has no recollection of what they did the night before. Instead of the basic wants and needs, I now have a fully realized and thematically rich character. But what is even more exciting is how this character interacts with the main character of my story. My original idea was one-dimensional, simple, and truthfully not very effective. With this new version of my influence character, I now have the basis for emotional and compelling interactions between the two principal characters of my story. Instead of simply forgetting where he was the night before, I have an attitude of remembering a painful experience in the past that creates conflict for everyone around him. In fact, on every level here, Harley challenges and impacts my main character in a way I never could have even imagined. In short, my work with the playground exercises enriches and enlivens my own writing experience. My hope is that by sharing this process, I'll be able to do the same for other writers and producers struggling with telling their own story. The ends are there in each one of us. It's the means that make them so. And that concludes my series on the playground exercises. If you want to learn how to do this yourself, we do have the Dramatica Mentorship Program. Go to narrativefirst.com/mentor. We also have a new product called the Narrative First Roadmap. If you feel like you don't need education like that, you can ask us for a roadmap. And basically what we do is we do the work for you. In less than a week, we figure out the Dramatica story form, we fill out all the story points for you, and we actually give you back a fountain screenplay. You know, it's formatted in the fountain format, which is a great way to write just a basic text editor. And you can actually just start writing your screenplay or novel right away. All the story points will be there worked out for you. So if you're interested in that, go to narrativefirst.com/roadmap. Thanks for listening. This was a long one. Hopefully this will be a sign of things to come, and appreciate everybody listening. It's great watching those numbers get higher and higher. And I look forward to speaking with you next week.